Gameforge is in the hunt, season 4. Retooled, rearmed with more knowledge to help you reach your performance goals and your next level. In the hunt, members, mount up. It's time for the hunt.
Welcome to this special edition of In the Hunt 100. Yes, we are not 100 years old. No, we do not know 100 things about golf. But what we do know is we have created 100 effing shows of In the Hunt. So welcome, everybody. For those that have listened to all 100, what are you doing with your time, man? Come on. But we have two special guests with us today. Well, not special. Well, they are special. But I couldn't really consider them guests. We have Mark Sweeney joining us. Oh, my God. We found Mark two in a row. Hey, Mark, how are you?
You found me. I actually showed up relatively kind of on time enough.
Enough. And then, enough. Of course, our other special person is Gareth McShay coming from Donegal, I believe.
Yeah. Donegal, my friends. Welcome or hello from Donegal. Donegal, fort of the foreigners. This is where the people first landed in Ireland that became Irish, that became the people who, you know, mainly, I suppose, created Americans. Because every American seems to think they're Irish.
I think Jamie Donaldson would disagree with you.
Well, that's because there's 10 times more Irish Americans than Irish.
That's why Jamie's not here.
But most Americans do believe they're Irish, so they all walk around, and there might be one in this podcast that just thinks they're just completely Irish.
7 out of 8 of my great-grandparents were off the boat, so whatever that makes me.
But we haven't seen the gene pool to verify that.
And they're from Donegal, so let's just record that fact.
But we want to see the actual DNA gene pool from that and not the...
I have it.
Not the hearsay of, my mother had a broad nose, therefore I'm Native American, like some of our U.S. senators.
I think
we get right to it.
We're all very comfortable here with the fact that we have mongrel blood. None of us can be purebreds, right?
Yeah, exactly. The best are.
And the really exciting part of today is we did bring some special guest hosts to celebrate. Myself, I brought Angel Envy Finisher Eye. The cool thing about this is it is 100 proof for our 100th show, and it's a $100 bottle. So,
oof,
spare no expense for you boys.
You're gonna drink all of that on the podcast?
The podcast would get dramatically more interesting in about 12 minutes.
It'd be 100% more interesting.
100%. That is spectacular. If you like rye. Whiskey's
that. I'm going to have some of that when I come see you next week.
Oh, my God.
The week so after, good. Whenever that is.
I got a little double up. Ooh. This is my first time, folks, to drink a bottle of Guinness, because the pint of Guinness is so revered in Ireland. I've actually never had a bottle of Guinness before. So it claims it's dark and lively and what have you. We're going to find out soon.
It's dark and lively.
It says it on the label. That's not me. That's not me making that stuff.
I just read what they told me.
Yeah.
And then Mark, do you have a co-host or are you flying solo?
Yeah, I just have a lager pulled out of my friend's fridge and I don't even know what it is. I poured it in a glass and brought it over here.
Sounds good. Little
something to keep me company. I wish I was at Brian's house right now, to be honest.
God, this, I might just sit back and listen to y'all talk and just enjoy this. This is like Christmas morning right here. I can't get over it. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a little fun, talk about things in the past we've kind of highlighted on and really try to quantify things in hundreds. So we'll talk about, you know, the 100 things we do wrong teaching. 100 things, 100 best golf movies. I don't think there's more than 3. But anyways, we will kick the curbs and kind of get that rolling. So without further ado, I'll kick it to Gareth McShay. Give us your best 100.
So
obviously not all 100.
Yeah.
But hold on, Brian, if you don't mind, one, why do you always do this to me? And two, what did you ask me there?
Oh, come up with your best 100 theme for today's show. And why do I always pick you first? Because Mark came in a little late. He's still trying to process.
I'm going to say, let's look 100 years down the line. And what does golf look like?
Cool. I see AI created monsters on the golf course hitting golf balls and human beings in pods acting as electricity for them.
Cabin for them, yeah. With the current distance debate, right? And I'm gonna jump in here, not on the side of the Orny and the USGA, because I think they've been slow to the party in terms of looking at the distance thing. But for Jay Moynihan to come out and say the PGA Tour won't back any rolling back of the ball, I think 100 years down the line, that's going to really hurt golf. I think it's going to hurt golf, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, because you can't have 9,000-yard golf courses. And we saw somebody this week, or you guys might have seen it, but I'm sure you probably did because you're nerds like me, close to 170 club speed. That guy's going to start carrying a golf ball distances that are just incomprehensible once he finds the middle of the club face. So what do we look like 100 years? I'd love us to look like we did 100 years ago. I'd love us to go back to, you know, persimmon to wood to hickory to feathery balls to, you know, not the caddies and that stuff, but just getting back to playing a game that's very different to what we're seeing right now. There you go.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more like NASCAR in the States or even Formula One. They're going to set such specific parameters for each piece of equipment inside the bag and neutralize equipment. They're going to have to. Then it's going to come back to the actual athlete being able to do whatever. So like in the U.S. auto sports, like the NASCAR, it's the exact same car. They just sticker it, and a Ford looks different than a Toyota that looks different than a Chevy because of the stickers, but they're all the exact same piece of equipment. So I'd imagine in the next 100 years, I think at the professional level, everybody will have the generic, it'll have tailor-made stickers on it, but it'll be the same head, the same everything in relationship to, and then we'll come back down to the athlete. It's the only way they can do it, because like I said, it's getting to the point now where these guys and ladies are just hitting it so much further.
Yeah, I think the distance is going to go away. I think you're going to have fewer golf courses, and it's going to cost $10,000 a round to play, and it's going to be more of a shot-making game than a power game. You know, the golf courses, I mean, where are you going to get big, long golf courses in the middle of cities anymore? Or it's going to take you an hour and a half to drive to them like it does in Shanghai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The good news is America's got a lot of property.
We do, but you got to drive to get to it.
Oh, I know, but we can support that a little bit. But small, beautiful little green islands will be struggling more with the if they don't roll these things back. Because again, it's just, I even saw one the other day that was a Instagram. It was, I don't know who was hitting it. Club head speed of 185, 190, hitting 370. Rory comes up and goes, if I can get within 30 yards of that, I'm pumped. And he hit it within 30 yards and killed it. But it's like we just don't understand what these guys are starting to do. Like the golf courses understand, the tour player understands, but the governing bodies, well, you know, and then again, I think the PGA right now is in such a creation of their own mess that they're not willing to do
anything. Place, Brian.
They're in a very interesting spot. They've already screwed yeah, over pretty much every player on earth, and now you're going to look at them and go, look, I'm going to roll back your golf ball too. I think it's not going to happen this year, maybe not next year, but after the dust settles, this will have to come back. Because again, I feel bad for the Brian Harman and the, you know, the Brian Gaze that hit it okay, but you know, you roll back the golf ball, they're going to roll back too with them. So the long is still longer than the short. Can't fix that, but they're going to have to do something to bring golf back to kind of what golf was.
Which was, it was creative. It was imaginative. It was adaptive. It was a sport for those who could create things in their minds first and then execute them afterwards. And that was, you know, think back 100 years in terms of technology right now. I mean, obviously, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We wouldn't have phones. Mark's glasses would look different, you know, all that. So things progress. I don't think golf is progressing in a way which in 100 years' time would make it anyway interesting to watch or participate in.
Well, that's the beauty of it is we will find, well, we won't, we'll be dead. But the next generation will find out what it looks like.
I mean, I thought this is the pickle show. We're all getting so pickled.
Well, if you think you're going to be around 100 years from now, good luck.
That tells you my brain's pickled already.
My brain's pickled. Very pickled. No, I think, like I said, to me, it's just everything, you know, technology and all that's important. It's progress and things. But again, we've got to be able to tap back into some of the traditions and some of the history and not just throw it away with, because this, you know, I think baseball for a decade inside the States threw it away because they did these big shifts. They took away the steel. They took away the game because data science took it over and said, this is the most efficient way to play the sport. But it was a very terrible show to watch on TV. It might've been the most efficient way to play baseball, but as a baseball fan, I was like, I can't watch this. It was miserable. It's just, you waited one or two. It felt like soccer. You waited for one or two scores, home run swings, and that was the entire game. So I think, again, baseball.
Make a lot of friends with that statement.
Yeah, I'm bashing everybody. But baseball.
Alienating 90% of the earth.
But the good news of baseball, to their credit, pivoted. They said, we can't continue on this path. Like, and they put in a pitch clock. They got rid of the shifts and kind of pulled it back from some of that and said, you know, we're still going to kind of respect your tradition of the game a little bit. And I've actually come back and I've actually started watching baseball again. I've actually sat down and watched a couple baseball games where I literally for the last 5 years, I might've watched two, and I probably watched 7 or 8 this season so far. So they brought me back as a casual fan again, by putting together a better product.
So Brian, you know, Centenary Edition, top 100, whatever we want to talk about, but you guys have gone deep into data, GameForge, you know, all you look at, you're not going to, we don't have time to look at the top 100, but what was the thing that 100% freaked you guys out when you first figured it out with regards to data and scoring?
I'll let Mark start this one.
Oh, that's right? Easy.
Oh my God.
a couple things freaked me out. First is that once you look at the data, you realize nobody is following what the data says, and almost nobody knows what the data says, including us at that point. And then when you look at it, like, God, that's so obvious, you know, once you understand it. But the other thing is, I think the biggest thing is how inefficient people are trying to get better. Like, we all know people try to get better at golf and they generally don't get a whole lot better, at least amateurs, but how there's so many different skills you need, and without a system, you know, and a data system or an AI system, you really don't know exactly where to go to work on your game. And people are just guessing all the time. It's just an absolute, well, I wouldn't say a total guess, but you know, when you look at the data, it tells you something totally different. You're like, whoa, I didn't even see that coming. You know, that's I think what kind of freaked me out is you look at what people are doing versus what the data says to do. And there's very little matched between them.
Yeah.
So Mark, what's the one stat that, that you want to share in this edition that, you know, the top stat, and people just go, I don't believe that, but you guys can substantiate with it. I mean, I've seen this stuff, right? But just for you guys to share something and go, wow, if you look at this, what's a number or stat that people are going to go, I never thought of it that way?
I'll probably give you two. The first one is that fairways are always way, 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 way less significant than people think. You know, everybody loves it fairways, but by the time you're not making OB off the tee, the correlation with fairways and score is really low, like really low. Something that has a much, much, much higher correlation with score is three putts at a higher level. You know, it's anybody breaking 80 or going down to tour level, between college and tour, three putts is one of the quickest ways to get a bunch of strokes.
Yeah. And to me,
it is what it is.
Yeah, very much so. Three putts hurt you no matter what. It's a guaranteed loss of shot, right? If you did your job, right, and got it too. life would be good.
Tour players are making half as many three putts as somebody shooting low 70s. Half. Yeah.
And then for me, the one stat that, or the, I guess the group of numbers that just kind of freaked me out when we first started doing this was how to shoot even, because nobody has a clue, right? You can ask, I guarantee you could ask a lot of top 100 coaches on whatever ranking system in the world and say, all right, give me the exact way that I'm going to shoot even par, and they can't do it. And then we broke it down really simply. Got to hit 12 greens. Six of those have to be within 20 feet. You got to make three. You're going to miss six greens. You got to get it up and down 50% of the time. Assuming no noise, no doubles, there's even. And that's really the pathway there. So if you're under 12 greens, you have to overperform on the putting green at levels tour pros do not do, the best in the world. So, you know, so to me, it's all understanding what the numbers are and functionality, and then let's start targeting those areas. And so to me, I think that was probably the 50-50-50 rule, we call it, is just ridiculous. And I would say the other part was just taking golf and put it in general sports terms. Offense and defense, right? Nobody talks about this in golf. Golf is
nobody talks about those things in Europe either.
Yeah, no. Well, you guys watch soccer, so there's not a lot of offense.
As for those general sporting terms, American sporting terms.
Yeah, it's American sport. Exactly. Offense. We want to see something actually happen. So when you break down, see a ball going net. Like, how do I generate birdie? Right? What does that take? What does that look like? It's my ability to hit greens, but not greens, proximity. How close do I hit it? But then that's just an opportunity piece. Then I have to convert. Now here comes putting and my ability to put the ball in the hole. Defense is the same way. When I miss a green, how well can I hit it within 6 feet, which we call P6 inside of GameForge? And then what is that conversion rate? And then we have noise, which is good, eagles, bad, which is doubles. And just now starting to manage these bigger, larger components. And then as an athlete and as a coach, if you start seeing the players' performances in these numbers, when I did use the word performance, not on the range in front of a box and spitting out numbers, actually physically them playing golf, start to categorize where they're good, where they're weak. Now you can come up with a true performance plan, training plan to get them hopefully moving in the right direction to become better golfers. Where again, traditional coaching is, I'm a really good swing coach, so when you come see me, we're going to work on swing. But I don't need swing right now. Maybe it's the targeting, maybe it's putting, maybe. So again, I think the interesting part is if the player understands the numbers and understands where they are and how they do it, they're much more informed, and their coaches are much more informed, and their ability to get better faster happens dramatically. In my humble
opinion. Yeah, I'd say the other thing that really struck us is for new golfers, start at the green and work back is not the way to go. It's all about starting at the tee and working forward based on the data.
No,
I actually had a conversation right now with people who were very well intentioned, and they were bringing me in to deliver a program somewhere, and they said, short game. This is the kids, right? And I said, right. Well, can I paint a scenario for you? And they're like, yeah. And I said, okay, little Timmy takes 10 shots to reach the green, chips and putts like a genius, makes 12 in every hole. And I said, little Johnny gets the green in two and four putts every hole. I went, who's a better golfer?
Johnny wins, yeah.
And I went, yeah, but the short game is important, Garth. And I'm going,
at some point,
only if you get there with efficiency. Yeah, I mean, a short game becomes important if you get there efficiently.
Yeah, I think.
Well, and the thing is, like, I've sat and watched corporate groups where 90% of the players have never ever played golf, and if you watch what they do, they all do the same thing: they bunt it down the fairway three or four times, get on the green, and two putt. They bunt it. They top it, they chunk it. They get on the green in four or five shots, and they two putt, and they make double or triple. They're not four putting. You know, they can't get the ball in the air.
Mark, is this corporate golf or your golf?
This
he bunts it much more than four times.
What's the difference?
He bunts it way more than four times down the fairway. So it's definitely not Mark.
Well, I smoke it into the trees and bunt it out of the trees and then hit it into a bunker, then bunt it out of the bunker.
But you always back in the fairway.
Bunt it under some branches back into another fairway bunker.
Well, I think again, like, yeah, we track something that's called shots to green, right? How fast does it take you from the tee box to get to the green over 18 holes? My son, who started playing golf during COVID, he's actually now starting to post scores in the lows in the mid to upper 70s. So he's, you know, in 3 years, he's gone from shooting 100 to shooting upper 70s. I'm a putting coach and a short game coach. How much have we worked in putting and short game over that 3 years? Less than 1%. I was like, can you hold the putter relatively okay? Can you learn aim point to get a read that's relatively good? And then can we just kind of just figure out how to get the ball close to the hole? That's all we've ever done. Now that he's starting to get in the 70s, we're going to start peeling that back and go, all right, now we've got to start going deeper. I could have made him the best, a great putter. But again, if it takes you 10 shots to get to the green, I don't care how good of a putter you are, it doesn't make you better. So again, the average to shoot 100, you're going to shoot 62 shots to the green, 37 putts, and you break 100. Well, okay, so now I'm going to get him 36 putts. He's putted great. Doesn't buy me room, but if I can get him to strike it better, understand dispersions and tighten up his ability to control the golf ball, you will see big gains quick. Hence, you know, it's kind of funny. I'm a short game putting coach, and all we've worked on for really 2.5-3 years is full game. Thank you, Gareth McShay, for a lot of help there. But a lot of that is that understanding of getting the ball to the hole quickly, and then we can start peeling back those other pieces.
That's all right. So, your 42 shots to green.
Oh, so say again, Mark.
I said by the time you're on tour, they get that 70 shots to green down to about 40 for the 42 shots to green.
Yeah.
For tour.
And players. Some collegians will actually be under that.
Right. And there's 30, 35 shots just getting to the green. You're not saving 35 shots on the putting green because nobody has 60 putts.
You never can. Yeah.
Well, hope not. If so, then they'd be a really short putting coach in England. And he'll make you putt like this.
Oh, Brian's like that 100 proof.
100, baby. Being 100. 100. Anyway.
What's the one golf movie? I can't think of many. I don't know. Caddyshack and Fall of the Sun. I don't know if you guys have seen Fall of the Sun. It's a Hogan movie. What's the one with the guy who runs at the ball and whacks it everywhere?
Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore. I mean, what's a golf movie you would watch 100 times? Is there one? Or what's the golf movie you would create that you hope people would watch 100 times?
Create? Oh, jeez.
It'd be Whiskey and Golf Around the World. I would want hundreds and thousands of people to watch that.
I think I've already watched Caddyshack 100 times, so I think I'm done with that 100.
Caddyshack's a classic. Tin Cup.
I do like, good, but yeah, I like Tin Cup
100 times, but I watch it every few years, and it makes me smile.
Yeah, that's funny. I do like the one with Will Smith. What's it called?
Tiger Vance.
Yeah, I do like that, except when he's talking about the grain, it goes one way in the morning and another way in the afternoon. And I'm like, nah, not so much, but okay.
Come on, Hollywood doesn't work right very often.
Bust him up, Mark. Bust him up right now. Call out Will Smith.
He'll come and punch you, dude.
Call his writer, be like,
he'll come slap you.
He'll slap you around.
I believe the whole movie until that. And then just the believability factor went away.
Yeah, no, that's fine. But there's not a lot of great golf movies. Now that
there really aren't.
Okay, Brian. Let's put you in the director's chair, Brian. What golf movie would you create to celebrate the 100th edition of In the Hunt? You got the chair. Mr. Brian Spielberg, do it.
Well, that movie's coming in the not-so-distant future. I'm in talks with Hollywood right now. It's going to involve cereal and beautiful golf courses, and we're going to merge the cereal with the golf course and create fun. And I'm gonna have John Daly playing me.
So is this cereal as in Kellogg's?
Cereal as in a grain that has been tricked into sprouting and then turned into a starch that yeast creates alcohol, thus being put into a barrel, thus enjoyment.
So it's a whiskey and golf movie.
Yes. Yes.
Actually, can I jump in here, guys?
I just want to follow Dustin Johnson around for a year with a camera. Either way.
That I was going to say, that would do it. That would be spectacular.
The Masters will never be the same. Anyways, what about you, Gareth? Do you see what would that movie look like in Ireland? I know it'd have sheep.
Oh, really, Brian? It would have sheep, would it?
The sheep are in the sheep are on the golf course.
Let's talk sheep momentarily because
yes.
I got some of the old GF logos here from Brian the last time he was in Ireland. I've dropped them into Hannah Hats in Donegal Town here, which is close to me. And we are going to have 6 handmade hats with the GF logo on the back, but they're going to be Peaky Blinder hats. They're going to be the classic Irish hat. Now, 3 of those are already taken.
Ooh.
I hope. I reckon 1, 2.
I want 3. One. I want one.
So there you go, right? We're going to therefore have 3 hats that we can give out as a centenary kind of celebratory situation.
And what are we celebrating?
We're celebrating 100.
So do they have to send us
the best movie? I think we should celebrate 100 by having a little golf trip to Donegal.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Because I also had a discussion yesterday with Donegal Golf Club and said, how would you like to have people come play your course? I played there yesterday morning, folks. It is genuinely sensational. It's one of the top links golf courses in the world. I don't say that lightly, but I played there yesterday, 7:30 in the morning. This place is spectacular. So what we're talking about all of a sudden, gents, is centenary trip to Ireland.
Yeah, we'll get somebody to come. We'll get some listeners to come. We'll get Lorcan. Lorcan will come with us.
I understand there's a brand new distillery right around the corner.
So, Brian, speaking of the top 100 podcast, what was the top one?
Top podcast we ever did? I believe it was one of the Aim Point conversations. I think the top 3 or 4 are all Aim Point conversations. So what I've learned is this group that listened to us is really desperate for putting advice. So they've hit rock bottom. So then they, of course, come to Aim Point.
Well, I think they've all had coaching for a certain person in the UK. Now they're all yippers, and they need our help.
That's right. Because the box tells me I'm the best putter on the planet, but I'm still averaging 33 as a touring professional.
But my Sam Putt Lab is perfect.
Well, your data has never been better, dude.
The data has never been better.
It's 100%.
I think Gareth, I think you were the second person in Europe to get certified, weren't you? Was it Jamie and then you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Well, what is one of your top moments? I should be very careful asking this question. What
on the golf would
be
course.
One of your top learning moments from Aim Point? Moments. Not any moment whatsoever.
On the golf course. Discussion. Not a Temple Bar.
That brings sorts of pubs in Ireland into the question.
We're using 100 here as a 100 topic, but like, I mean, I've spent a lot of time with you, Mark. I've spent a lot of time with you, Brian. I've been honest in the past where I was, a cynic when Aim Point was brought to Ireland. And when did I 100% commit to Aim Point was when I read a putt on the second green at Evanstown Golf Club. And my eyes told me this thing is like a foot off the right. And my feet told me it was 8 inches off the left. And I'm like, psh, Sweeney's just like mathematician, my ass. Guy doesn't play golf, doesn't understand things, right? And I hit my eye putt and it broke further away from the hole than I could have ever anticipated. And that was when I went, I am 100% committed to this. And by the way, folks, if you're listening and you've learned Aim Point, you're toe in the water kind of person, not sure. I promise you, if you stick with it, it'll come a point in time you go, I'm committed, because you will see a putt and you'll hit it and it will just behave differently than you anticipated. And your feet had told you that already. And you had this incongruency and this, cognitive dissonance. And then you go, oh, the feet don't lie. Like the hips don't lie. Shakira, she was onto something.
She's onto something.
Shakira.
Shakira.
And she's a tax cheat, but hips don't lie.
Wow.
Other things lie.
tax returns.
I think with Aim Point, the one of those moments that really just freaked me out is when Express came about. I'm literally in with the college.
I thought I was
team.
Insane.
I didn't think you were. I just didn't know what the hell was going on. I get this freaking long email. This try it. So we're literally at Florida State college team. I'm caddying one of our players. I have the chart out. I'm using the chart. I'm reading the putts. Then I'm just kind of going in the middle, just kind of making shit up because I wasn't really sure what was going on completely. And my reads doing it incorrectly, especially compared to what we do today. They were all within, you know, I would say a tolerance that would be acceptable at the collegiate level. So Florida State, I actually put the book in my back pocket and I was like, well, that thing's gone. And then Express just went nuts. So to me, I think that was one of those moments where I was just like, this is some weird sorcery going on, but it's ridiculously good.
What is this sorcery?
It was weird because, like I said, if anybody's old school aim point where we use the charts, inflection points, turn into this midpoint read, which was easier, but still complex. To the point where literally you just kind of stood there, took a number, held up some fingers, and you made a really good read on a putt. I was just like, well, world has changed. And it has.
Nah, I had a lot of people telling me I was insane. I'm like, dude, I don't understand it either, but I'm sitting here watching at work and I keep trying to poke holes. You know me, I'll try to poke holes in something really hard and blow it up before I tell people about it. I was like, I just can't really blow holes in this thing. Yeah, it's like for whatever reason, mathematically it works. And
yeah, it was weird. That was one of those moments in life where you're just like,
it's all going to be different now.
and like I said, back. If you watch TV on the weekend, even though the broadcast networks don't like to show it, if you look in the back when they're walking a guy leaving the putting green and you look in the background, I guarantee you see people straddling their putts. You might not see it on TV as much as. But it's happening a lot.
There's a lot of straddling going on.
There's a lot of straddling going on. It goes back to our Dustin Johnson series.
Yeah. 100 proof kicking in hard.
There you go. I've actually got envy. I'm 100% envious of Brian right now. He's got a buzz going on here.
I know. That's the funny part. I'm only halfway done. I'm just keeping it 100, people. Just keeping it 100.
And he thinks everything he says is funny.
I'm sorry for your wife. I'm sorry for your kids. I'm sorry.
Trust me, they feel it too. They would agree 100%. They're like, dad's in the basement. Life is good.
100%.
So I think a funny category is give us of your top 100 worst coaching mistakes, give us one of your top 10 oh boys moments as a coach, like when you've just completely wrecked something.
Oh, I got one. Want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I freaking first time I saw Padraig Harrington, he was doing aim point, he kept missing left, and I go, it's because you aim left. He goes, I do. And he looked at Ronan, and Ronan looked at me and shook his head. I went, uh oh, did I say something I'm not supposed to say? And he's like, do I aim left? And Ronan goes, kind of nodded his head, like, yes, but I can't believe you brought that up. He couldn't make a 3-footer for the whole week. Missed the cut by a mile. It was at Honda Classic like 10 years ago. And that's when I was like, I just literally just said one thing to this guy and it got in his head and he couldn't make a putt for 5 days from 3 feet. Just destroyed him. It's like, okay, I get it now. I get why all these tour coaches BS their students. At least you might not help them, but you're not going to break them either. Sometimes the truth breaks people.
Well, you laid a pathway for him to thereafter go on to win the Honda Classic.
Yeah, he's actually second the following week at Doral, I think. So I didn't destroy him. And then the next time he asked me, he was in Masters, and he said, how's it look? And I go, and he's still aiming left like he always does. And I go, looks amazing. And he finished like top five that year. I go, looks awesome. And he looked at Ronan and goes, see, Sweeney thinks it looks awesome.
looks like you're aiming a laser.
I was like, you just do what you do, buddy. I'm behind you.
How about you, Gareth McShay? Are there any moments that you wish you could have pulled back from instruction?
Oh, Brian, there's too many. Like, how am I supposed to pick out of my masterpiece, my toolbox of mess ups? Wow. I would say, honestly, good coaching is as much good luck as intellect, right? In that you have the knowledge, but you still have to find the manner in which to describe it, which resonates with a human who's a completely different experiences to you, and so on and so forth. So yeah, Brian, this is really hard because I have to think through my toolbox of unbelievable mistakes over the years, and now I'm getting slightly depressed. And
your energy is dropping as you talk.
Why couldn't he ask us for 100 best?
I'm with you.
Because nobody wants to hear good stories. If it bleeds,
I can tell you.
Okay, so I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to disassociate from the question because I don't like it. I'm not comfortable with it. Shit just runs off me, folks. I'm stoic. I don't want to know about it tomorrow. If it happened yesterday, I don't want to know about it today. But I've always stood with a world famous coach. Let's call him Hutch Barman, right? So let's be discreet about this. And he's instructing, and I'm shadowing, and he's coaching this guy, and this guy had been with him the previous year, and Hutch is saying, "Well, look, you're still flipping your wrist." The guy goes, "Oh, for fuck's sake, I used to stuff knives down my wristband to stop me doing this, right?" Nice. And Hutch looks at me, and I look at Hutch and going, "This is not normal behavior, right?" And the guy pulls up his sleeve, and his right arm is slashed. Like, there's just scars everywhere. Yes. And he was going, and we're not going to promote a brand intentionally, but Audibear PK or whatever Roche brand you wear, if you're listening right now, we are open to sponsorship. So he's wearing one of them. And he was like, I was literally stuffing knives down my armband and my watch band to stop me flipping. And his forearm was in ribbons.
So he's a cutter and a flipper.
Yeah. So, Brian, you know what? No matter what I've done in life, I don't think I've done that bad.
I've never done that.
Wow, that's saying golf pretty seriously there.
I mean, that's a cutter and a flipper, man. That's dangerous.
But back a year later to spend a lot of money with, Hutch Barman, and to be told the same thing again.
He's obviously a glutton for punishment.
Loves a bit of BDSM.
Goes back to his cutting.
BDSM, not just S&M, BDSM.
That's right.
Throw a few more vowels in there.
All right, so I'll be nice and I'll give you the easy way out. What was your highlight of coaching?
You're actually not getting away with this, Brian.
What's that?
Brian tried to skip out from this one.
You have not told us your destruction story, and you can start very close to home with Gavin, or you can go elsewhere.
I have never destroyed anyone. It's been nothing but rainbows and
unicorns.
No, I think my biggest mistake in the beginning was thinking that you could solve things technically, and I think that's most young coaches, right? You come up with technique and knowledge and think you can apply that, and people get dramatically better. He's away, so what can we do?
I'm going for a wee report because Yaddle left the building momentarily. The building.
So again, I think my biggest mistakes came in when I first started teaching, thinking technique was the key, and not understanding that performance drives everything. And really getting players maybe better or maybe worse, whatever I did, but in areas that just didn't matter. So either I might have destroyed you, but it was such a finite little area that it just didn't really trickle into the full score picture. I think it was
Their numbers look better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, the box said, it kept going face square. That was great. Stuff like that.
Smoked it 215 down the fairway with a square face.
Didn't really matter, but all right. So yes, maybe I might have. There might have been one, maybe two that I could have done a little bit better. But other than that, I think it was pretty good.
That's boring. All right,
now give me your best. What was that one story where you're like, ah, oh, that's what coaching's about?
I don't know.
You don't know.
The problem, I tell you honestly, the problem is I teach so many people who they come and they learn and they go away, and I never really follow them. You know, I have so many juniors and college players. Yeah, I had a guy come in the spring. He goes, oh, yeah, you saw my college roommate last August. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I haven't heard from him. How's he doing? He goes, well, he won three times last in the fall alone. He won three times. I'm like, oh, there you go.
Mark's got a putting puppy mill. Say that really fast. Putting puppy mill. He just turns
putting puppy mill. No, but I hear things like this where students are like, oh, yeah, I didn't tell you, but I won four events in a row last summer. And I'm like, good to know.
Yeah, I think
as a putting coach, you know, this as a putting coach, you're the last person they call. Unless things are bad, they call you and things are bad. But if things are good, that you're the last person they talk to.
Yeah, you don't even hear from them.
And I've had students win 75 tour events over 15 years. And you're literally the last person they call.
Well, I had a cool story the other day. I had a girl I helped. She learned aim point, and I kind of, you know, I'd help her look here and there every once in a while. She'd come see me, lives about an hour and a half from me. So she'd come every once in a while. Family doesn't have a lot of money, you know, kind of middle class, but, you know, to afford a full-time putting coach, really not whatever. So her putting stroke, she sent me a video. I hadn't seen her in a year, and it was terrible. I mean, it was just mechanically, it was just a lot of pieces that were not optimal. So I knew, like, you know, I was like, well, let's just do this. I said, who's your favorite golfer? She said, John Rahm. I go, all right, you got 7 days. Send me in 7 days and mimic John Rahm's putting stroke. So he, to her credit, busted her butt and mimicked John Rahm's putting stroke, sent me the video. It wasn't it, but it was in the ballpark. But all the pieces that were really, really bad kind of got better, right? You know, it was better. And so then I was like, okay, so now why is John Rahm doing those things? And she goes, well, he does this because it, you know, it's probably trying to control this or that. So she kind of taught herself mechanically what she was trying to do, what she was thinking and what was going on. Never saw on her putting green. And Garrett's going to get mad at me because I didn't charge her for any of this, right? So, you know, this is just chats back and forth. And then, you know, basically then I said, all right, here's what you're doing good. What could you do better? Like, what pieces do you think you can improve on to putt better? So she basically taught herself the entire putting stroke via a couple text messages with me. And then she just won the Virginia State Junior Am, sinks an 18 footer on the last hole to prevent from going into a playoff, was on the Golf Channel. Golf Channel showed some of it and whatnot. And it was all really driven by her and her teaching herself, me guiding and helping. But to me, I think that was one of my favorite coaching moments, and the fact that I didn't have to leave my basement. I was able to help her, and the tangible results of her owning what she was doing was really cool. So what does everyone learn from this? You don't need putting coaches. Sorry.
You can be an ogre and just stay in your basement.
Worst moments.
But to me, I think fulfilling wise, you know, I've had players go professional. They've won on tours. I love all of that, being a part of kind of a stepping stone for them to get there. But I thought, to me, that was just absolutely fascinating for a player that wants to be good, just didn't have the guidance. And then just for me, just kind of nudge her a little bit and watch her just take off. And that was pretty cool.
Mark, I don't know about you, but I feel like we've been absolutely shafted here, right? Because he set us up and gone, how bad have you been at coaching in the past? Give us your top 100 moments, right? And then he tells us about how awesome he is. We've been shafted here.
Yeah.
We've been shafted.
100% he set us up for that.
Well, that's what happens
when you get right out of, like,
when you have the biggest
fail.
When you have the big microphone, you get away with things like that.
That's 100%.
Unfortunately, he's in control of his. Yeah, unfortunately, he's in control of this meeting too, so we can't just mute him.
Mark's just went muted. I don't know what happened. Oh, Mark's back.
Hold on, let me try to mute you. No, I can't mute you. You're the host. Damn it.
All right, so Gareth, what was one of your best moments? See, I'm being nice. I'm bringing it back to you. Closing the circle.
Brian, I'd be very modest. I've never had a best moment because it's never about me. It's always about the client or the student.
Oh, it's so cute. It's so cute.
However.
Yeah, I get it. You're the behind the scenes guy. I appreciate that.
I think the best moments are those moments where
did we lose Pop yet?
we talk a lot about this, you and I. You know, you enter somebody's world and they tell you their concepts or their theories and what they operate upon, and you just you just show them a door to a different portal and they go, "What?" And you go, "Well, let's try it."
Yeah.
Maybe it's for you, maybe it's not for you. And you see some remarkable, and by the way, folks, let me say this. You don't see change in 30 minutes or 1 hour. That doesn't happen. 100 minutes Centenary Edition, that doesn't happen. But you change concepts, then you genuinely will see change because a player will adhere to and go after those concepts in a different way than they had previously done. So, yeah, Brian, we all talk a lot, and I love that moment where you see somebody's eyes kind of brighten and the pupils dilate and they go, "What?" And you go, "Now I've brought them somewhere they haven't been before, introduced something in their world, and they go, I want to learn more about this." That for me is, I mean, we've all worked with high-end players. We've all worked with players who've achieved, you know, amazing things. But sometimes it's more often than not, it's that moment where a player who won't ever go on to achieve national or international fame, but you know you've helped them in their world, that's very satisfying.
No, I agree. I think you have those moments sometimes in training where it's just there's a click with the player and they get like it goes from being completely hard to understand and relate. And then one swing, they're like, oh, now I get. And then that's that base level. And then they're going to start building from that. And that's going to set them off in a different trajectory. And those are the fun lessons where you have that moment. And you're like, I'm walking away. You know, George Costanza, it gets no better than this. I'm leaving the room. Like I can't, we've hit this highlight. So I think those moments in coaching are probably the most fun. They happen. They're not as much as I would like to see them happen, but they do happen. And they're fun to witness and really enjoyable as a coach.
So Brian, come here. Have you had the opposite, right? Where you've had a player who's had 100 lessons from 100 great coaches, right? And they arrive to you. Brian Billy is the savior, right? The savior, the savant. And they go, okay. And you go, well, maybe if this, right? And they go, but I actually feel like I rotated my left pectoral at 1.2 degrees less than, blah, 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 right? And Brian's going, I literally just asked you to swing the putter. So,
yes, yeah.
Have you had that moment?
I've had tons of those moments. Being a college coach, we would have athletes going all around the world seeking out the best names for one day. We used to call it chasing pixie dust. I went and saw the number one putting coach on earth and spent 3 hours with him.
Hold on a second.
I've heard that quite a few times, by the way.
And let me guess what they taught you.
Number one putting coach in the earth as defined by
major
themselves
off publication.
Themselves.
Okay. No, oh, I'm sorry. Well, if that's the case, you're not talking to the number one putting coach on earth.
Yes.
I just compared myself.
I didn't want to throw you under the bus because this gets real ugly here in a second. But if you want to take that mantle, it's yours. No, we would get a lot of
I've had quite a few students come and say they've done the I flew up there, spent $3,000-$4,000 for a half a day and did all this. And I go, cool, what they tell you? And they're like, I don't really remember, changed my grip.
You get a lot of that.
That's about literally about the most I've ever heard is, well, change your grip. Maybe you should go left hand low. Maybe move the ball position forward to the half a ball.
Most high end coaches have a generic lesson plan that when people show up, they just give you and they hit you with a lot of platitudes, a lot of stuff. You feel really good. But when you spend a couple $1,000 and you make your way back home, you hit them with that. Okay, let's apply some of the stuff you just learned. And they're just like,
You can't remember it.
Or the better one is we've been working on these putting coaches come back and go, what did they say? Pretty much what we've been working on. Okay. At least there's validation there. So yeah,
well, like, they should be upcharged there. You should not go, well, you flew there to substantiate what I'm telling you. My fee's gone up.
Sorry, 400%.
Yeah.
Validation just like charge.
Just like your whiskey.
Yes, yes. I got to start teaching more now. I'm actually teaching more nowadays because my allotment bill gets more expensive every day.
So Brian Bailey is interacting with humans?
Yeah, I know. It's so miserable. Ugh. It's so miserable. Yeah,
you're such an ogre.
I actually did an 8-point clinic last week. Oh,
hey. Oh, you did it? Well, that was a fundraiser, right?
No. This one was a fundraiser for my car payment.
Yeah. No, it was. I just bought a new truck for your whiskey collection. I'm so close.
A shopping fund.
Yes. That's my daughter's getting ready to go to college again, and it costs a lot of money. Fundraiser.
It's a Redbreast 12 fundraiser, folks.
Yes, yes. I think that's what I'm going to start doing. I'm going to just say, here are the two bottles of whiskey you need to bring, and I will teach you aim point. A barter system. Oh. But no, I think, kind of as I look back at all this, you know, because we started this because of COVID. And we were bored. And Mark Sweeney and I created this data platform. Didn't know what the hell we were kind of doing. We kind of knew what we were doing, but we didn't know where this was going to take us. So we started this show. It's been 3 years ago, 3.5 years now. We have 100 shows. We've had over
millions of listeners.
We've had over 40,000 listeners that Spotify checks. Like, there could, I'm sure there's more. I'm sure we've been, I'm sure algorithm, we've been suppressed over the years. But again, Mark, when we first kind of threw this out and we brought in Jamie Donaldson that talked about a joke with a bull testicles, which we won't bring up, and all the way to the point right now, did you see us reaching 100 shows?
No. But then I thought we would. And then there was last fall where I thought we just stopped doing shows for, we didn't even know why we just stopped doing shows.
Oh, I know why, but okay. We didn't know why.
We didn't know why. We just got lazy last fall. We're like, oh yeah, there's that podcast thingy. No, I didn't think so at all. No, I actually did not think so.
Yeah. I can't believe we got there. And then Gareth McShay, you've been, of the 100, you've been our one reliable other. I don't know how many, I'll have to go back and look how many you've partaked in, but by far it's been more than anybody else. Did you think hanging out with these two clowns that it'd be one, worth it, and two, educational?
I'm 100% not going to answer those questions.
I'm 100% not answering that.
Here's what I'll say, right? I love when we get on and we chat. And look, we're friends. We meet each other several times over the course of every year and engage. And we're always looking for ways to assist people in getting to where they want to get to in their golf journey. And we don't care where that is, folks. Like, we're not golf snobs. We're not tour players only. We're everybody from breaking 100 to 70. And I have actually laughed a lot on these podcasts. I laugh. I always listen to anything I do, whether it's a presentation, conference, or a podcast. I always listen back and I go, wow, this is actually, it's been fun sitting with these two goofers, right? And throwing stuff around. But there's always a gem in there somewhere, guys. And I take notes of what we do. And yeah, Brian laughs at me, but I do, because something resonates with me over each podcast to go, wow, if it could be, I can move it to a different piece of what we do, but it still resonates and I can go, wow, this is great. So did I think we would get here? No. Did I think I would get here? Genuinely, you know, but I'm delighted to be here and it's been so much fun. And we're doing a whiskey thing, which is fun as well, folks. You might get invited to come to Donegal with us. You might get a bespoke Hannah hat. Bespoke to the extent that this is the only hat that is handmade in Ireland anywhere. every other hat you buy in Ireland probably has a made in C and then followed by a Heine. Right? These are not made in C Heine. These are genuinely handmade in Ireland. So if you're with us, guys, you were Heine. Yes.
The best part is you can look in the backyard and actually see the sheep that donated.
You actually can't. Oh, it's funny. Here's why. Donegal sheep are too hardy. Their wool is too intense, right? These sheepies go through a lot of shit in life, right? A lot of the yarn in Donegal is from Australia. Yeah. And it gets soft from after
where?
But anyway, Australia? But it's not, it's definitely not from C. Heine. And that's important.
Very good. We're probably at about 45 minutes to an hour. I guess
I'd say we're over.
Oh, we're way past that.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap this puppy up. I'll go through with some super editing and I'll bring it down to the number we need. It's like proofing whiskey. I'll just add a little bit of water and bring it down to wherever we need. Let's go ahead and close this out. Boys, give us a kind of a 100th kind of closing remark, whatever you want to share with the audience or what have you, and we'll shut this baby down. Mark Sweeney, you can go first.
Oh, I was just going to say, make Gareth go first.
Okay, Gareth McShay, you go first.
Okay, well, my 100 request would be let Mark go first.
This is like pickleball. Back and forth.
All right, my 99th request is make Brian go first.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us on this. I just want to thank everybody.
Here's what I'll go. Okay. Forget you. Okay. I'll go. I'll freaking bite that bullet for you boys. Here's the thing. 100 shows ago, my biggest concern was, can you actually create enough content for 100 shows of golf on performance and a little bit of aim point sprinkled in, even though those were top five. The other 95 shows that we did that were not top five, can you create enough content? And what we've learned is that there is a ton of performance-based content that we didn't know, other people don't know, that you can just go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. The mental stuff that Gareth does, golf is so rich in terms of that. There's so much that you could understand, and you can go as deep as you want, but we are trying to make it so you don't have to go all the way as deep as we go. Otherwise it can get overwhelming, frankly, because Brian, you and I have been looking at data for years and years and years, and we're still uncovering stuff. We're like, whoa, how come we never looked at that before?
Our number one statement is, why has no one done this before?
Yeah. Almost on a weekly basis.
Yes. It happens a lot.
Happens.
All right, Gareth McShay. All right, Gareth McShay.
So, to Mark's point, I think what, I like to think we are doing right now, and we will continue to do, is we are bringing the best analysis of golf performance, of life performance, if you like. But we're giving it to you in very palatable doses. We're not overwhelming you with positions and degrees of owner this and, you know, X, Y, Z numbers. We are literally saying, if you can come with us on this journey, and it is a journey, and we're all learning upon this journey, which I love, we all know we're going to see different results because you simply have to. If something different is happening in your life, then something different is going to occur in your future life. And training is not about training in the moment. Training is about training for future performances. You guys have figured out the data, and I'm looking at the neuroscience and the cognitive and the learning and the training. I just think this is exciting and fun, and we want you guys to come with us, and let's get to 150 and 200.
No, I agree. And I think the most fun I've had now is there are people, not many, but there are people that have grabbed me and go, I've seen you on Fuel, I've listened to your podcast, and they just start harassing me because they literally feel like they're part of the conversation because we're just having fun, giving you some information, but we're having fun. I taught a clinic, older guy, just started ripping on me left and right, and it literally felt like a podcast. And it was very funny. So, of course, I am not one to shy back down. I went ahead and started ripping on him. So we had a very entertaining 2 hours on the putting green. But I think the really cool part is, again, there's nobody doing kind of what we're doing. There's, you know, there's people that talk golf, pros, whatnot, people that talk golf positions. You know, there's that. But I don't think anybody ever gets into the data, kind of the learning part of it. And then again, how to apply that to become better golfers. So that's really kind of what we've tried to do in a very fun and jovial way. And we appreciate everyone that has joined us on this ride of 100, and we'll see if we can do 100 more.
And I'm sorry for you're obviously rough. Mentally deranged, and you need some assistance.
Yeah, no. And
if you do, contact Brian Billy.
Yes, yes. It was very funny, though. I've had about 5 comments now where I've kind of rolled up in a different group or setting, and they're like, I've seen you on Fuel, and blah. I'm like, oh, man, God. Nice to meet you. All right, let's go. Let me shake your hand first. All right,
now I'm actually very sensitive.
I'm very sensitive, man. Yeah, that is not one of the things my wife can verify. Yeah. Sensitivity is not one of my strengths.
I can verify that, Uncle Brian.
I would say not an empath.
That's how I can sum up Brian right there.
Yes, yes. I could have empathy, I think, maybe once. Didn't like it, got rid of it.
Did nothing for me.
I'm much more of a problem solver. What's the problem? Let's solve it. Let's just solve it.
Quick crime and solve it.
Yeah, we can.
Hold on, Brian. What if you're the problem?
Well,
how do you solve yourself?
Well, then the beauty of that is I have no introspection either, so I'm never the problem.
Like so I said, not always the problem.
It might be a problem for others, but for me, there is no problem. Man, we're going esoteric on all this shit. We need to stop this. But thank everybody again. We'll be producing, like I said, every Tuesday. We've kind of set the goal of this group, and everyone's looking in the camera right now. Every Tuesday, we're going to try to release new podcasts, and ideally, we'll try to do it as a group or a version of, you know, when Grandpa Sweeney's not in, we'll have more co-hosts, and when Grandpa Sweeney
when I actually show up to our scheduled time,
we actually show up to a scheduled time.
We like when Mark doesn't show up because we get to drink whiskey.
Yeah. No. Oh, it's been really good. I've gotten a lot of good feedback going.
That's good to know, actually.
I've gotten positive emails from listeners going, you and Gareth are very funny together. I'm just like, well, I'm just saying.
Oh, so I feel bad all of a sudden.
But, you know, now, granted, it was, never mind. I was going to go everywhere, but I can't. It would have been a touchy.
Might as well. Go ahead.
No. I'll do it when I stop rolling. So thank everybody again. Okay. We look forward to bringing you another 100, and find us on GameForge, find us in Fuel, find us on your favorite podcast, Gareth McShay at Aimpoint Golf Ireland, Mark Sweeney at Aimpoint Golf, and me at Speakeasy Mixing Passions, and Gareth shaking his head. So it's Aimpoint.
You know, the fact that you don't even know his email is shameful.
It's not his email. It's his Instagram.
You know what, folks? If you're listening to this, I'm embarrassed for you. Just go and find me yourself.
It's Aimpoint Ireland, right? Aimpoint Golf Ireland.
Aimpoint Golf Ireland.
There you go.
Ireland.
It's Aimpoint something. So thank everybody again, and we will bring you more wonderfully produced shows in the future. Thank you so much.
This has been a Fuel production.